This is the Adam Gold Show.
I'm sure Brendan Whitted from the League Pass Lair at HU Cosell on Twitter has this on his phone somewhere. Let's talk a little NBA basketball with my friend Brendan. He joins us on the Adam Gold Show. What's going on, man?
I love me some Smokey. This is obviously a classic, but cruising.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
Ooh. Man, I mean, if you want to just vibe out real quick, there it is.
Well, I'm going through a like an Otis Redding, Marvin Gaye run right now.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Man, that's, I mean, Marvin is one of, like, because my mom loved him so much, that means that, you know, you hear, once your parents love something, you're going to hear it enough to either love it or hate it. And, like, Marvin's right in my wheelhouse. Like, yes, absolutely. Motown all day.
And there's no question about it. All right, let's get a couple of things. First of all, I want to start locally. I want to start with the Charlotte Hornets, who have won four in a row, two of those games against the Bucks, including one in which Giannis and Chris Middleton combined for 70 points. And then last night, for the first time since the Obama administration, they beat the Sixers.
Yep.
What's up?
This is who this team is. All right, so I'm just going to give you a quick since December 10th, right? They go win, loss, win, three losses in a row, three wins in a row, two losses in a row, and now this latest four-game winning streak. This is who this team is, man. Like, it's fun to watch. They're going to, like, between their pace, they're one of the faster teams in the league. They're top five in offensive rating. They're fun to watch. As a fan, them being so bad defensively can hurt, but they've been better defensively lately, and you've seen those wins accumulate versus good teams. You mentioned those other teams are at full complement. You know what I mean? Like, those are – that's a as full complement, I guess, as the Sixers are going to get this year. Hi, yo. But that's against the whole squad. Tobias Harris and Joel Embiid played. Embiid was amazing, as he should have been against a smallish team. The Hornets are a pretty small team.
Yeah.
And so he dominated – understandably, they even got an Andre Drummond, Joel Embiid lineup, which I haven't seen a lot of this year from the Sixers. They got them both playing, and they still pulled out the win, which is pretty impressive considering how badly they've played the defensive rebounding.
The other thing about what the Hornets have done of late is that it seems to be a different guy every game, which is, like, I think Bridges has been, for the most part, very steady, but we haven't seen... at least lately, we haven't seen enormous numbers out of LaMelo Ball. So, you know, Rozier goes off for like 28 the other night, or like last night it was Gordon Hayward. It was 9 for 9 in the first half, 13 for 16 overall. I think he had 7 assists and 30 points. So they have been getting contributions and big numbers kind of all over the place.
They've got six guys averaging at least 10 points a game. Including who was missing last night in the 76ers game, Kelly Oubre, who's had his best offensive season by a mile. This is just a team that's going to beat a different guy is going to beat you every night, as you mentioned. And I think that's kind of what makes them dangerous. Look, they don't have that top tier superstar talent. You know, when they play against Joel Embiid or they play against Giannis, no, they don't have those guys. But what they do have is enough depth to really bother people, particularly at that wing position. You mentioned Gordon Hayward, by the way. He's been, after, you know, having a terrible injury history for the last 3-4 years, honestly, he's been one of their most consistent guys in terms of he's played, I think, tied for the most games for this season. This team has been wrecked again by injury and COVID protocols, and yet they are still finding a way to win. This is their best through 500. I think last night was their second half. So the first half, in terms of first halves per season, this is the best they've looked in terms of win percentage in the last 3 years. James Borrego, I sing his praises all the time. He's not a guy that kind of gets more national coverage in terms of coach of the year and those sorts of accolades. I am always impressed by how he's able to develop players and manage minutes so that multiple guys get Cody Martin.
Yeah.
Cody Martin is having a stellar year. He has increased his three-point percentage, and he is an invaluable defensive player. He's arguably their best perimeter defender. Like, this team does it with a whole bunch of guys. Again, no top tier talent, but it's fun to watch every night because you don't know who's going to do it.
Are they players at the trade deadline? I'm going to ask you about a trade in a second, but are they players, for anything significant at the deadline, or would you simply let this roster continue to develop and just take what you can get the rest of this year?
I'd love for them to go try to pick up or snag somebody on the market for a center. Nothing trading anything big. Now, look, the Miles Turner or Sabonis, you know, those are guys that have been mentioned or for top tier sort of big, yeah, that you can pick up and that are available. So if you can make a deal for Miles Turner, I'd have, you know, you have to kind of measure it. But they're really, I don't feel like there's any untouchables outside of LaMelo on that team. Because as I mentioned, you have multiple guys at that wing position: Hayward, Oubre, Martin, McDaniels, like obviously Bridges. There are a whole bunch of guys there that are, it's interesting. And you will have to pay Bridges, by the way, who turned, yeah, down an extension earlier and who has been their top scorer so far. Had a nice 21-point night last night, even though he's shooting the three-pointer not as well. They're going to have to make some decisions because it's hard to have a whole team develop together, particularly when you got young guys in that spot.
Would you wait to do something like that in the offseason? I mean, is DeMarcus Cousins available? Could he help the Hornets?
I mean, as maybe a reserve player. Like, they really – the thing is, there are a lot of times when they – and you saw it kind of get exploited a little bit last night, and I mentioned some of their defensive rebounding woes. They're very small. And P.J. Right. Washington, who has played most of their center position minutes, they have Mason Plumlee, but he is not a good player.
He's Mason Plumlee. Know how, so the,
yeah, I mean, he's just – I thought you were getting more playmaking from him. I saw him play in Detroit. Yeah. He has a lot – he's actually a very deft passer, but he's so limited offensively.
Right.
And he's not a good enough rebounder or even really a good enough defender to kind of make up for that deficit on offense. P.J. Washington goes from playing Giannis one night to Embiid the other night. P.J. Washington like 6'7", 6'8". You know what I mean? Like, that's right. That's too much to ask for a team if you want them to have any sort of real aspirations of competing. Now, in terms of timeline's tough. You know what I mean? Like, they were supposed to be bringing everything along slowly. They pick up Gordon Hayward on that big deal that they gave him. And then LaMelo is better earlier than people thought. And now all of a sudden you're a playoff caliber team. And so I know that probably changed the calculus for them a little bit in terms of calendar, but I feel like striking while the iron is hot is a good idea, because ultimately you're also going to have to make some financial decisions as you're carrying all of these wings and they're all having some sort of contribution.
Brennan Whitted is joining us at HU Cosell on Twitter, League Pass Lair in the house. All right, so former Duke shooting guard Cam Reddish was like, what, the 10th pick in the draft a few years ago by the Atlanta, yeah, Hawks. Just got traded to play with one of his best buddies. RJ Barrett was the 3rd pick in that draft after Zion was the 1st, and now Reddish was traded to the Knicks. What do you make of that from a Hawks perspective? And is this an opportunity for him to play more because his minutes had been dwindling?
Yeah, the Hawks are another team that are kind of bloated at that wing position. And you got guys like Collins, Bogdanović, Reddish, Hunter. And so you don't necessarily – there was going to be decisions made. That was a very obvious thing kind of walking into the season, that they were – even if they weren't going to do it in the midst of the season, they were going to have to do it soon. I don't know if they got enough back for him. I'm a big Cam Reddish fan. The thing that I thought really gave them an extra punch in the playoffs last year, because keep in mind, he didn't really play that much during the regular, right, season. He was hurt most of that regular season, even with the run that the Hawks went on. But once he got in there, you could see with his athleticism, his how vicious he was on offense, getting to the cup. You see the feathery touch from deep. Like, there are things there that make you think that this guy could be a kind of a next level sort of player. And pairing him with guys like Randall and Barrett, it's easy to see how that could all work together. I don't know if the Hawks got back enough for him, but because everyone knew that they were in a position where they were going to have to deal one of them, maybe that's what it is. I think they get a protected first.
Yeah,
I haven't looked at the protections yet, but I didn't think that was necessarily enough, because I think Reddish is a guy that contributes immediately and makes you a better team.
Like, I just remember Reddish from his days at Duke, and he's also a very capable defensive player. He's, yeah, got size. Obviously, the shooting range as he continues to develop as a player will grow. All right, now I don't know how much you've seen of late from RJ Barrett, but he appears Like, if you just looked at his numbers now versus last year, you might think he took a step back. I don't think he took a step back. I think he's getting better. I think he's becoming more consistent, and he's certainly been on one of late.
He's certainly being more consistent lately. I think that he's one of those – we don't really use this word anymore because of positionless basketball, but he's a bit of a tweener. Like, he's and I don't mean by position. I really mean what you want from him. Because I think Barrett is a scorer. I think he's a dyed-in-the-wool scorer. I think that because he handles the ball well enough, there has been some things placed on him in terms of playmaking.
Uh-huh.
He's not a playmaker. And there's this really fun thing that happened last night. RJ Barrett is on a breakaway with Obi Toppin. The game's out of hand. It's getting fun. And Toppin is waiting for the lob right off the backboard. Because this is him, right? Real
right.
Name, no gimmicks. This is Toppin, 100%. And like Barrett just finishes it with a very nice double clutch underneath dunk. But it's like, hey, how did you not see him? He doesn't have that kind of vision.
Okay.
Like, he's just not that sort of a distributor. And that's fine. Everyone doesn't have to be great at everything. Now, he's been more consistent from deep lately, which has been nice. I also like to see him being aggressive and trying to get to the line. I think that really helps because he's got a good big body. He's a strong dude. He's a left-hander lefties are historically very annoying to guard.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes he can settle, and sometimes because they put him in those pick-and-roll situations, he can settle for some contested long twos or some threes that really aren't him living his best life. I think if they can get a good setup guy, which, again, Rose being out for that team is tough. Quickly isn't really that guy yet.
Not yet.
He might be one day, but they don't really have anybody to set the table. But I really would love to see him with a kind of a more old school pass first point guard, because I think it would help him and Randall out. There are some times when I don't love what the shots that Randall is getting. He's kind of regressed a little bit from his three-pointer percentage. He's not getting to the line as much this year. And he's gotten into some really tough ISOs. And while that is a thing he can do, I don't know if it's in his best interest. I really want the Knicks, if they can, to make a play for somebody that can set the table for a whole bunch of these finishers, including Reddish.
All right. I want to talk about not necessarily two games, although these four teams I want to address each played each other very recently. I want to start with the game I watched the other night. And I was actually, you and I were going back and forth on DM about this. I had my first experience watching the Memphis Grizzlies in their home game against Golden State. And I didn't think that was the best Golden State had to offer, and that Draymond Green did not play. But I came away from that game going, holy cow, the Memphis Grizzlies are the future of the NBA. I love Ja Morant. I don't know. I mean, the Grizzlies had a bunch of guys I'd never heard of, but they're good.
They are very good.
I mean, they are good. And Ja Morant is, I don't know if he might be the best point guard in the league. I'm not sure. He is awesome. They're
awesome.
Fun to watch.
And he's a face of the franchise kind of guy. And so you're going to see and hear a lot about him, as you should. He has developed this mid-range floater thing where he doesn't have to get all the way to the cup because he's like 190 pounds, and that's not always the greatest idea for him, because you know he has no compunction about trying to bang it on anybody at any time.
Right.
So it's nice that he's got a little floater now that he doesn't have to do that. But this team is a lot more than him. It's Desmond Bane. It is Jaren Jackson Jr. It's Dylan Brooks. Like, Dylan Brooks got a lot of – I know they're not similar in the way that they play, but in terms of toughness – like, him and Draymond Green got a lot of that same sort of stuff in them. Where Dylan Brooks, I'll take the big three to win the game. He does not care at all. There's no fear, and that permeates throughout the rest of that team. They are incredibly fun to watch. I don't know what this translates to in terms of postseason, because we usually see younger teams kind of fold a little bit in those situations. But I'm having fun right now, and if you're a basketball fan, you should too.
Yeah, Jaren Jackson, you can miss me with the two-handed shot, though. I don't know what that is. I don't. It looks.
Let that man live.
No, I can't. I watch that. I'm like, please stop. Stop shooting it. It hurts to watch. I know Golden State doesn't have the best record in the league. They just got Klay Thompson back. He's not obviously not in rhythm by any stretch of the imagination. But are they going to be the best team in the league?
Oof, man. Maybe. I mean, like, they're like, they've been good enough for long enough that that is a real possibility, because they play they're playing defense at a clip that it just doesn't seem like they should. You know what I mean? Like, obviously Draymond, cool. And then you start pulling out other great defenders they have. I'm a huge fan, and we talked about a little bit of Gary Payton the second.
Oh my gosh, I love that guy.
I mean, that guy is physical. He is, I mean, I know he's only about 6'2 or so, but like, he is just, he's incredibly athletic.
Yep.
He'll switch on to anybody as they like to do with Golden State. And they'll have Draymond kind of floating as a safety for a whole bunch of other stuff. But he doesn't care who he gets switched on to. If you're big and you got him on your back and you think it's going to be easy money, nah, he's going to make you work for it. Like, he kind of embodies a lot of the stuff they like to do. They've also gotten a lot of stuff from Jordan Poole.
Yeah.
Andrew Wiggins has been a little bit up and down, but if you can incorporate Clay and it not take away from some of the other guys that have stepped up in his absence, I mean, that can win. That's a good enough team to win the title. Absolutely.
And basically, we didn't really spend any time talking about Steph. All right, we're not going to end up talking about the Bulls. I'm just going to ask you about the Brooklyn Nets. If you were the Brooklyn Nets, and I started seeing conversation about this, I had not even thought about it. I didn't even know this was the punishment. So, like, Kyrie Irving is not allowed by New York City ordinance to play home games at Barclays Center because he's not vaccinated. But the punishment for essentially ignoring the law is simply a fine. So if you're the Nets in your remaining home games, scratch a $68,000 check to the city of New York and dress Kyrie for all of your remaining games. This shouldn't even be a discussion. If they are willing to do that, are the Nets easily the team to beat?
If they're willing to do that, I still have some issues with some of their offense. And as much as once you add Kyrie, then okay, you know, it's only been a couple games back. So, all right. Some of their early offense looked really, really bad because it was just, as much as I love KD and Harden and ISO, it could get a little ISO heavy. They're missing some guys. They're missing Joe Harris. And they're kind of pulling guys on the street and asserts this, as a lot of teams are. But I worry a little bit about that. But I think that they can find their rhythm. I'm not really concerned about the offense. I will say this. It's not a great look. It would not
be a great terrible look
for the NBA, just because it looks like you're thumbing your nose at everything else so that you can have what you want.
It's exactly what they would be doing. We would stop talking about it. After a week, everybody would stop talking about it. It would just be, this is what the Nets have chosen to do.
Oh, 100%. Oh, no, it's 100%. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if the NBA, like, Central Committee or Central Committee, good Lord, NBA headquarters, a little quick call, like, hey, man, don't do that. Because it's not just a bad reflection on the Nets. It's a bad reflection on the NBA at large.
That's true.
You're openly thumbing your nose during a pandemic. Like, there are some fines you can pay and stuff like when MJ and then we're talking about, oh, we were smoking cigars in the locker room, so we just paid and stuff. Okay, that's cute, right? Like, right. It's like, oh, okay, man, those guys are rich and adorable. This feels a little different.
There's no question that it would. All right, as we say goodbye, when I play this for my 13-year-old as we're driving in, who is now suddenly into the NBA because he's playing 2K with his friends and he's on this JV basketball team. He insists that Dwight Howard is the best player in the league currently. Please just laugh at him and that'll be good.
Man, he must be playing those old 2K.
I don't know, man. I can't.
Like, go back and play them at their height. That's what's up. Oh, man. Yeah, that's a take. That is a take. You know what? He has a career. You know what? Matter of fact, he has a future on radio. I don't know what you're talking about.
I asked him about that. He doesn't want that. He doesn't want to be on the radio. Brendan, you're the man. I appreciate your time. We'll talk again soon, man.
Absolutely, man. Love it.
You got it. At HU Cosell on Twitter. I kid you not, Dennis. We're driving in and he insists that Dwight Howard's the best player in the league.
Okay.
Okay. I can't.
Okay.
I just, I'm like, Jack, he hadn't even been a starter in like 6 years.
Yeah.
But he's all in with Dwight Howard. He's all in with Dwight Howard. Okay, I can't. I just can't. You think he's better than Giannis?
His
His favorite team is the Bucks.
Okay.
Right? You think you're? Think he's better than Giannis? Oh yeah, Mike.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. That's all we need to know.
You have been hit in the head.